Service with the grace of God and the ace is the 10th of December, 1967. And for that, I'm very grateful. That was hard for me. That was different than most things I've done. It's funny when you go to inventory, I don't know, I don't believe it's just me, but when you discover things about yourself that are unattractive, it's almost as if you'd rather not know them and keep them than it is to have to admit to them and own them and change them. I mean, is it just nuts? I'd rather continue to have the problem than I would be able to face the unmanageability, dysfunction, whatever the heck we would call it in that process. The story that we told, and some of it is tacky, it's just life. I mean, there are none of us that don't leak. There are none of us that do not have issues that hurt the fabric of all the relationships in our lives. Life is lived in relationship. Whatever dysfunction, whatever defect of character, whatever pathology we have, leaks into and affects every relationship we have, whether or not we think so. Life has become so secular, society has become so secular, we tend to be more godless today than I think we have ever been. Psychology and self are the gods of our world today. Psychology is enormously helpful, is a wonderful tool, but it is not generally deep enough to heal many of the wounds that we bring into the room. I just called a buddy of mine, Frank M., from Chicago, and he was relating a guy in the group that had been in the group for 25 years but had stopped coming and got kind of paranoid about the group and committed suicide 2 days ago. Married, living in the basement, his wife's living upstairs, he's living downstairs. And Frank's his sponsor, but he hasn't used Frank in a long, long time. And he knows what's wrong with Frank, and he knows what's wrong with the group, and he knows what's wrong with AA, and he knows what's wrong. And then he started using other stuff. And we underestimate the power of the disease of drug addiction and alcoholism. It is a powerful, deep disease. The line I like the best that describes us, we are the elite of the mentally ill. Which I think is more true than we are. I mean, we have one of the most treatable maladies in the world. But we are not free. I mean, lots of us walk around with different labels that are mental illness, be they depression, be they anxiety disorders. I mean, we are rampant little suckers. I mean, we are, you know, they could empty this room out and take almost all of us to a mental institution and in sobriety could find a diagnosis that is treatable under today's standards and diagnosis. And yet we know in our seats that if we can latch on to and apply the spiritual principles that we've been given to in this program, that we have a resolution to that, not a partial resolution, something that goes beyond the absence of the problem into the healing of the cause, goes to the causes and conditions that we are dealing with, and goes beyond neutralizing them into allowing us a full measure of life. One of the great frustrations, I think, for most of us is we are this dichotomy of very talented people with very serious problems. And we almost never get to play the instrument. Many of us never get to play the instrument that we were designed to play in the orchestra of life because of the... I was thinking when I was a young man, so many of us that are alcoholic, we don't fit in corporations. I mean, we just don't... I mean, it's pretty unusual, not unknown. I mean, we have doctors and surgeons and all sorts of stuff. Where the hell are you going? Never changes, you know. Just But very few of us work for large corporations, because most of us cannot accommodate the structure of large corporations over an extended period of time. That's not true of all of us. I'm not trying to make a... But we are eccentric people with serious issues that have to be addressed and often don't fit in organizations very well. The reason I think... I mean, the only telling the story that we told this morning only makes sense in the context of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why else would you tell such a tacky story? And it's a story of hope. It's a story of healing. There is no unfinished business with me and my children. If I could go back and have undone it, I'd go back and I'd undo it. Am I pleased about how it was? I'm not. Am I pleased about how it is? I am. It's just what is, guys. We're just telling you our experience. We're not trying to make it right or wrong or anything. It's just our experience. I'm going to take 3 or 4 quick minutes. Our kids were dented. Daniel, the young man that just went out of the room, 13 years sober, 31 years old. Or is he 13? His name is Daniel. Anyway. I have trouble with the details. But I'm married and I have all the access. I have access to all the details. Daniel was also a very problematic young guy. He was attention deficit, learning disabled. We did not have a sense of the extent of it. He went to, 4 or 5 grade schools. He went to 2 or 3 high schools. We almost had to buy a high school to get him a GED. We paid $25,000 a year for the last 2 years to have him go someplace. I mean, he spent almost 2 years in a school in a timeout room, where he took apart the blackboard in different parts of the room. I mean, he just literally was put in a room alone. You can imagine the psychological condition of a young man who did not have a normal social experience. And we're in a pretty socially comfortable family. And he's got an experience that is just as unacceptable as you could possibly have. He kept thinking about going back to school. My mom and dad had 7 children, 21 grandchildren. And I remember Daniel and another one of his cousins were talking about, they're the losers of the family. We're the losers. The rest of the cousins, you know. So Daniel wanted to go back to school, and I said, look, I don't want you to go back to school just so you don't have to work. When you're really ready, we'll have a conversation. And 6 years ago, he came back and he said, I think I'm ready. And he applied. They wouldn't accept him. He read at a 4th grade level at 23 or 4 years old. And he got accepted as a non-academic or non-degree-seeking guy. Long story short, he went to this wonderful university that had a program that helped attention deficit kids. But he got the tutors. He got the advice. Where before, Linda would have done it all. If Linda could have gone to school for Daniel, and Daniel got a degree about 3 years ago. Bill, who's more his mother's child, went to UT, lived in Europe, came back, got an MBA at Columbia, and has worked in different places and now works for me, or with me. Peter went to 5 colleges. He went to 2 or 3 before he got the idea of attending. And while he was in his 3rd one down in Texas, there's a guy named Bill Pittman who's dead now. But Bill Pittman and Bill Bazans had a conversation with him about upping his game. And Bill Pittman said, why don't you come go to school in the NYU? Oh, NYU. I mean, I could never get... Bill Pittman, who I sponsored at the time, takes Peter to New York and takes him to NYU. If he goes to NYU, NYU says, look, kid, you're not going to get in. The film school is tougher to get into than Harvard. Thank you for being interested. Goodbye. Peter moves to New York, moves across the street from NYU. Now, I had a shotgun up his ass for 4 or 5 years trying to get him to do things. Now, you could have put it in his nose and you could not have stopped him. He started taking non-degree-seeking stuff. He got all A's. He was a teaching assistant. He went through, and finally, they had 4 places left the second year he was there. And he said, look, I'm not going away. How many people do you know move across the street from your goddamn school and come over here once a week to admissions and ask, and they gave him the spot and he graduated from NYU in film. Went to L.A., worked with Alan Ladd and different people, got stuck, decided to reinvent himself, took 3 months off, studied for the GMATs, got a master's degree from Oxford University, with an MBA, and then he went and did an interim with the Dalai Lama, made a film called Beyond Our Differences, which is shown on public television. The World Economic Forum made him a young global leader, and Harvard gave him a full ride with a fellowship, and he just finished the Kennedy School at Harvard. Now, this little asshole could not have, I mean, I bring that up.
Before, when I told my dad I was nominated as a young global leader, he looked at me and he said, well, before you were a young global leader, you were a local screw-up. That's a polite way of putting it, I think.
But the line that don't kill yourself in your first 5 years of sobriety because you'll be killing the wrong person. I'm always a guy who I think I have some general idea of what my children should do. I had absolutely no idea of the last 5 years of Peter's life. Would not have been able to script it. It is so far out of the box, and it's a God thing that all of us laugh at. It is beyond his expectations of whatever he thought would have happened for himself and beyond what our expectations are, and it still doesn't take away the pithiness of life. So I'm a guy who, but what I wanted to say, with each of their problematic, Bill's path was pretty linear. Dan and Peter's path has not been linear, not been easy, and have been extraordinary, and we're grateful. It's just life. You take, chop wood, carry water, walk forward. As you walk forward through whatever, you know, lousy, crummy little circumstances, we keep collapsing the difference between our life and our life's circumstances. Our life circumstances are not our life. And every once in a while, all of us know people whose life circumstances are worse than us, and their life is better than us. Because we've lost that distinction. Because in society, it's how much money you have, how big a house, how fast a horse, how young a woman, how much money, what watch, what sunglasses, what phone. I mean, it's just nuts. It's nuts. There's no peace in any of that. So I'm this screwed up young man in Alcoholics Anonymous doing the best I know how to do. My gift, I love AA. My gift, I found my place when I walked in the front door of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was home. I found someone. We got a new guy right now in our work field who's been a real hard-shell Christian, and now he's got our problem, and it's like he just can't, I mean, he is on fire. He just can't quite believe, and now he's getting, you know, some of this is making deeper sense than it has ever, he studied some of the detail of it, but now he's getting what our version of what spirituality is and what life is, and it's just been a joy to him to kind of put these two things together. But when I walked into my place with a version of truth and life that was mine, with a group of men who are real men, who are accomplished people, who helped me learn how to get my life together. They were examples for me. I found my methodology for work, which is partnership, not aloneness. I can clean the garage with someone else. If it was left up to me alone to clean the garage, We'd have to move. I'm serious. I would not ever do it. You find out what, and my wife, who manages almost everything in our home, which is wonderful. I've not had to do that. But you have taught me the reason that I am able to be here today, in love with my wife, in love with my children, having a healthy, current, present relationship that is not, that there's not anything missing or unsaid or withholding or, you know, it's healed. The reason that I am here is I've had a sense that my job is to clean my act up, to become a man with certain quality, with integrity, with honesty, take it on, get it done. I mean, today there's so much conversation about what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The measure of what it is to be a good AA has never been what do we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is partially what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the measure of the men that were our heroes was also marriage and family. Now, they ain't perfect. I mean, there are some people who are my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't want the family experience they've had. There are some people that are my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't want the business experience. So it isn't like it's perfect. But the measure of who you are as a man has never just been what you do behind a microphone. It has always been who you are in your life. And it ain't perfect. There is no one who is out there who's doing it all. I mean, life is like that. I mean, life, there's no preparation for life. Life is fired at you at point-blank range. You don't get to practice. It is just presented to you. You show up, you take your best shot at what you do, and mostly over a period of time is correcting mistakes. Okay, now we criticize people for making mistakes. I'm overly critical of my children. I forget, you know, I mean, Daniel once said to me, "Craig, you didn't man up till you were 30. That does not give you permission to be a jerk until you're 30. Stand up, Daniel, just so. So the last couple of years, I've had some serious business troubles. I've almost drove the bus off the cliff for the second time. So wherever we leak, we tend to always leak. So we have to pay attention. If you have an anger issue, I suspect throughout much of your life, you have to pay attention to anger. If you have money issues and you don't know the difference between investing and plunging, you may have to attend to some of those things. But the men and women that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous with gave me the impression that it's just your turn in the barrel, kid. You're up. Your turn's up. Stand up. Take it on. Get in the steps. Get in the program. Talk to me, and we'll see how you do. It's your turn. And I knew, I mean, it's pretty hard to go through life without knowing how to work. Okay, I knew I had to get that one handled. I found a partner. My partner's over 48 years in alcoholism. We've been partners 42 years in the real estate business. And that's like a marriage. We are very different guys, but we've argued about everything except money. We've never had an argument about money. And he's a great AA guy. So I didn't resolve much of what I've explained to you are my issues until I was 7 to 8 years sober. I had a second spiritual surrender, which most of you who have heard my AA talk know about that. But it took me that process to surrender, to run out of self again, to be able to admit, and the reason I wasn't able to get into it was fear, abject fear, and I didn't know I had it. I'd done 3 inventories, and I never got to how afraid I was as a worker. I never got to afraid I was as a husband. I never got to as afraid I was as a father. I never got to afraid I was of failure and success. And I think a hell of a lot of us are more afraid of success. We have the paradigm of survival. Drunks know how to survive. You take a person who takes 40 grand a year for them to live, if they accidentally make 30 grand the first quarter, they slow their earnings down. So by the end of the year, they get to 40. Because 40 is the number. I mean, they're programmed. I mean, they have, it's a zero-sum game. They know what it takes, so they wouldn't know what to do with the extra 10. And I mean, we are so locked in our stories that sometimes we can't escape them. But my process in my with my family, with my bride, with my children, is a to a great extent the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is taking whatever strengths and weaknesses I have had and taking them on, not having an excuse. It is getting counseling when I had to get counseling as a parent. It is finding the right partner. It is having the right conversation with my sponsor, which is, why is that so hard? Why is it so hard with a person who knows you that well to sit down with someone and just tell them what's going on a regular basis? And take it on. That's all it is. And if I present it, if I find the right help, if I have the right honesty, if I take the right openness, if I involve myself in the steps, and one of the reasons I do that is because you also sponsor people. That idea that you said last night about, I forget who you quoted, about not only can you not keep it, you can't get it until you, I mean, that's a refinement that is very cool. So my story today is your story. It's a story of what the gift I've been given with you. I came in here because I had drunk my life into a state of unmanageability that I could not imagine. I came because I had no place else to go, having no idea that if I came to you and stayed with you, that late, that 6 or 7 years, I had the success of the first couple of years. I had the success of being a good member of AA. But I didn't have the life that I needed to sustain myself. But because I stayed with my sponsor, going to meetings, trying the program, at 7 years, I manned up a second time. I surrendered a second time. I think that's many of our experiences. I think we make extraordinary progress in the first couple of years, but most of us have a second come to Jesus moment in our lives where we have to man or woman up at a level that is beyond what we were able to. You don't get it done in 1 or 2 or 3 years. You don't have to. So part of it is thank you. Part of it. So when we sit with our family, it ain't perfect, but it's wonderful. It is very cool to have the love that we have for each other without the yeah buts. It is very cool. Would not have that without you. Wouldn't have had a chance to have done the thing without the tools that, and the partnership that you have given me.
Hi, I'm Linda. I'm a grateful member of the L&N family group. Bob, I forgot to thank you for inviting us. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Bob said that when he first came, he found his place, and he was home. That isn't the way I felt. I wish I had. It took me about 7 years to really claim that this was my place, too. I also was a psychiatric nurse, and I didn't know how much I would need some of those skills as I went on in my journey. Bob kiddingly used to say I had my own private practice at home, and I sort of did. But anyway, it took me a while to, I guess the first 7 years for me was I blamed my poor behavior on my husband's alcoholism. And anything that was wrong with me, I could blame him. And it was easy for me to do because he was much more out there. I'm a careful person. I'm a watcher. I go to an amusement park and I have to watch the ride go around about 4 times before I know I can get on the ride. My whole family rushes up and has tickets before they've even seen what goes on there. And, you know, I mean, we're just wired differently from the very beginning. So I'm careful. And I was a blamer. And one of my wonderful sponsors, I've had 3 great sponsors in my 44 years in Al-Anon. And my second one, her name was Marcy. And she said to me, "You blame everything on your husband's alcoholism." And she said, you ask the question why way too much. You know, why me, why this? Everything was why. And she said, you are going to eliminate that word from your vocabulary. And I remember saying, why? And I did, and we laughed, and that's the way that went. But she said, if you say why, you are a victim. And if you ask what can I do about it, you become active in your own recovery. And she said that will change. And that was one of the big things that changed for me. When we were going through issues with Bob, and, you know, when I say Bob's issues or the kids' issues, you know, their issues were maybe more glaring, but I was a jerk in those issues. I mean, we have our own way of handling it, and it didn't work. And so when I stopped asking why and started taking responsibility, I started to become a person who claimed my life back. And that's when things started to change for me. I started to look at what happened with either Bob or with the kids, and I was more concerned with my part in it. Now, I have to tell you, and there's a lot in this room that know, but having using alcoholic addictive children is very inconvenient. And if you want to look good, they do not help. And I've always been a person who wanted to look good. And, you know, when your kids are throwing all the pool furniture into the pool at the club and you get a call in the morning that everything's floating on the top of the club, I mean on the top of the pool, to frogs in swimming pools, to, I mean, we have stories that are just, they're just fascinating. They're only fascinating now because they're not happening any longer. And we've been blessed with sobriety. And I have been given this incredible relationship with my God. In the early years, like I said, God was part of my life, but he wasn't everything. He or she wasn't everything. Now, everything I do, I try to do it in conjunction with. That's why today was a little bit scary and exciting, too, because I wasn't going to prepare. I thought, I'm just going to see where it goes. There's healing that's going to take place because of this. And I hope it's with you, but I bet it'll be with us. And we have the opportunity to be servants. And that's what's so nice about all of us. We're all involved in a program where we take responsibility for our own actions. I'm not blaming one of them for the upset in my day. If I'm upset in my day, I'm responsible. And it used to be I was a victim because of all these people who were changing my life. I didn't see my part in it, and I see my part in it, and I claim my own life. And of course, I was given the tools to live my own life. I came looking for tips. I came looking for tips on how to get Bob to behave. Yep, that's why. And to look good. A good wife should support their husband. So that's why I came. But I finally learned that there were tools here how to live my life. And they're the 12 steps. And if I apply those and all the principles, I try to apply them. If I do the very best I can every day, take responsibility, I'm in a good place. One of the things that I think changed for me, too, was as a mother, I felt I was responsible for all these people. And everybody was sort of haywire. And, you know, if I just did it differently, if I just did it better, if I was just stronger, if I were something else than what I was. And that's a lot of work to keep that one going. And I finally had to look at my part and their part, what I could do and what I couldn't do. And really look at that. I used to think everything was my own business. And that was mostly you. I would love to change you. Them. And right now I've got it down that there's three things that are my own business. That's my attitude toward the day, my relationship with God, and what I put into my body, what I take in and what I don't take in. You know, the good nutritive things, the things like fresh air and good water and good literature and lovely music and not gossip and not negativity. You know, those are the things that I have some control over. We're like a walking meeting. I mean, when we're together, we are really working on what our part is. And that's the beauty. I don't mean to say we don't blame, but we don't blame for long. You know, there might be some words that come out, but I'll tell you, I can tell you with three kids, especially the two that are in this room, if there's a harsh word, I can either tell you that within 20 minutes I'm calling them or they're calling me. And one of us is saying, you know, I was really wrong. That wasn't the way I wanted to do that. Can you imagine where we've come from? And the only reason that we were lucky enough is that my husband had a disease called alcoholism, and he came to AA, and he was able to get sober and start practicing these principles in his life. And then I started to grab onto them. And boy, we were in for a ride with the kids, but we had them. And we always loved the kids, and we adore them. They just fulfill and make our lives so complete and so wonderful. But I'm not responsible for their lives. I'm responsible for the love I give them, the support I give them, but I can't make them be as I want them to be. And you know what? These days, I don't want them to be anything other than what they are. I don't know where I got my ideas of what perfect was, but they were not good ideas. And now my idea is to stay with myself, stay in gratitude, and be kind, gentle, and loving. I know there's people in this audience that have the same issues because it's life. We all have issues that we deal with in our relationships. And the answer, I believe so strongly, is in the 12 steps of AA, Alateen, and Al-Anon. Thank you.
I'm Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. I was told that we were doing question and answer for the second half, so kind of said most of the things that I wanted to say, you know, before the break. But just to tell you a little bit more about my recovery, as I mentioned, I first started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for myself when I was about 16 or 17 years old. And then my sobriety has been continuous since I was 19. And I just turned 19. So for the first couple years, and my father told you a little bit about kind of, you know, some of the things that I was facing when I got sober. But by the time I was 19, I had a 90% chance of serving time in a federal penitentiary. I had to go to Minnesota's equivalent of Scared Straight, where they take you into prison and they tell you this is what it's going to be like. You know, this is what your future is going to be like if you continue on the path that you're on. And if you would have looked at me, you know, from the outside, you would have thought that I was hell-bent on destroying myself and destroying my life and all the gifts that I've been given. But I was just doing the best I could to kind of make it through my life. And from as far back as I can remember, I was never okay. I was never okay in my own skin. I never fit in school. I never fit in church. I didn't fit in my family. And I couldn't live my life by any of the values that I wanted to live up to. And so somebody came up to me at the break and was talking about getting sober really young. And getting sober at 17, and I know my parents got sober relatively young or came to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, but I think things were a little bit different then. You know, by the time my father came here, he, you know, was expected to be an adult and, you know, had a lot of adult responsibilities, and it was a little bit of a different paradigm. when I came here at 18 years old, my life was super dysfunctional. Nobody expected me to be an adult. And I got sober, and I had to kind of make all of the mistakes of life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know where I kind of got the idea that sobriety, and my dad talks about this in his talk a little bit, but the idea that sobriety is the absence of problems. And I'm not very good at having problems in recovery. And I've had lots of them. I mean, hell, I got sober when I was 18. So, you know, I had to grow up and, you know, learn all life's lessons in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's been kind of an uncomfortable thing. And I was talking to my mom. You know, we had a couple of talks about what we were going to talk about today before we came here. And I was talking to my mom, and I just said, you know, I'm really nervous about coming and talking in front of everybody. And I don't feel like I'm, you know, in a good enough place, like I should be doing public speaking in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going through a lot of the same issues that my father's talking about. I have a lot of grandiosity issues, and I make nonprofit documentaries on peace and nonviolence and the positive role of faith. So you can imagine how much money I make. And raising money right now for those kind of projects is a lot of fun. So it's interesting, and I'm in the process of, you know, looking at going broke and failing, which is something I'm not very good at. It's interesting. My dad always says, you know, we're great starters, but we don't finish. And my dad was, you know, telling you kind of all these things about me that I probably wouldn't tell you about myself. But it's interesting. The thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been able to do is I've been able to finish. And you guys taught me that. Because when I came to AA, I couldn't finish anything. And, you know, my mom talked about having a relationship with God. And the only thing I knew about God by the time I got here is that I couldn't meet the criteria for the relationship, and I was in trouble. And it was interesting. I was a recovering Catholic by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and had been kicked out of almost every, you know, church and, you know, school in our local area. So I didn't have a great relationship with God, but it was interesting because I was able to kind of put all those things aside for a period of time. And I experienced love and acceptance and forgiveness and tolerance in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that became my God. And another thing that I learned from AA, which I just think is one of the most fantastic things in the world, is Alcoholics Anonymous is an upside-down pyramid that is set up to serve the person who has the absolute least. You know, everything else in the world is an upside-down pyramid that's set up to serve the person at the top. And Alcoholics Anonymous is set up to serve the person who needs it most. And if that is not a model for what we need in our world today, for what we need in our communities today, for what we need in our families today, you know, and that's become the model of, you know, my work, what I do in the world, or what I try to do in the world. So it's interesting. I went through this process of kind of turning away from my religion and opening myself up to this spiritual experience, and I think that is what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is set up for us to do, for us to have a spiritual experience sufficient that we can have a psychic change and a paradigm shift happen in our life, where we're able to live our lives by these principles that we were never able to live our lives on before. So you look at the principles, the spiritual principles of the steps, you know, honesty, hope, faith, courage, you know, these words. I could have never lived my life based on these principles ever before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's interesting, you know, my dad's kind of a storyteller. I mean, he has a job, but most of what my dad does is he travels around the world and he talks to you guys. I've become a little bit of a storyteller and you know, I make documentaries, and I used to kind of work on studio movies before that. But as my dad mentioned, that didn't really work for me, and I wasn't happy, and I just kind of felt empty doing that.
But you look at this guy named Joseph Campbell, and he studied mystic structure and folklore all over the world, and he said that, you know, these stories that we tell are as old as man, and they're all the same stories. There's really only five of them, and they all have the same characters in them, and it's kind of the hero's journey, you know. And the hero is presented with this opportunity, and it presents his greatest fears and his worst nightmares at the same opportunity. And at first the hero says no, but then at the last minute he says yes, and he has to go down into the pits of hell to face all of his fears, to come back and, you know, hopefully triumph over these things. And, you know, I think that that's obviously been, you know, some of the experiences that we've had in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been true in our lives, that have been true in our families, and have been true for me. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I obviously don't know where our family would be today. I definitely don't know where I would be today. And, you know, my father was talking about we all kind of get our turn in the barrel, and I was listening to Carla. I don't want to keep picking on you, but you're the only person who's spoken so far. So, but I do get to see people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are going through greater issues in their life with more dignity than that I think I can muster at any given time. And that gives me hope. And that's a role model for me to show up and to take my turn in the barrel. And you can't have great success without failure. And it's interesting because I don't like to fail. But, you know, my father was mentioning this project that I just finished. I just made this documentary on the positive role of faith, spirituality in the world. And it was one of the hardest things I ever did, and I learned so much, and I saw so much. I literally got to go around the world and examine God's work in the world for 3 years and talk to some of the most incredible people. And I have seen so much of that power in the world that I can never deny it, ever. And it's interesting because on any given day I can deny it in my own life, like I'm not worthy. And that's not going to work for me, and it's not going to happen, but I can no longer deny it in yours. And that's been such a gift. So I'm just really grateful to be here today, and I'm grateful to be able to sit here and have a relationship with my parents. I know so many people whose relationships have been torn apart, and they're not able to stay in contact with their parents. And I had so many people walk up to me at the break and say, you know, my kids are still out there. They haven't made it yet. Or they're not talking to me, and our relationship isn't working, and we haven't healed. And, you know, that's definitely been the experience with so many of my friends and so many of the people that I used with who are still in the same rooms living those same lives of, you know, quiet desperation. And that was a life that I was destined to lead before I came here. So thank you.